This hour is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, the nation's leader in independently owned and operated talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
This is the Paracast. Kevin Randall joins us. We're always happy to have him on because he's a wealth of information. Now, in researching the government UFO files, did you find any particular cases or legends or anything that you thought may have been true, but this research showed otherwise?
Yeah, well, there's one that springs to mind immediately, and it's only because it's here in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I was looking for stories of people reporting a disc-shaped object prior to Arnold in June 24th, 1947, because the skeptic argument is the idea of a disc-shaped or flying saucer came from a misunderstanding of what Arnold had said. He wasn't describing the shape of the objects. He was describing their motion as a saucer skipping across the pond. So the skeptical argument says everybody was seeing flying saucers, even though the objects hadn't been saucer-shaped. So I was looking for any stories that I could document prior to Arnold talking about this shape. And if we go back further enough in history, we could do it. But there was a story in a number of places I found it about a railroad engineer in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, walking along and seeing 10 disc-shaped objects fly overhead, and it was published in the newspaper on June 23rd, the day before Arnold. I thought, this is a great story, and I looked at Dick Hall's UFO evidence, and it was in there, and it says June 23rd, and I found a couple of other places, and I could find some footnotes for it that led me back to 1956. But I couldn't find anything earlier than that in the books. And I thought, you know, I live in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I'll just go down and look to the newspaper files. So I went down to the library. I discovered there were actually two newspapers in Cedar Rapids at the time. One was a weekly and didn't publish on June 23rd, so that was pretty well out. And I was looking at the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and I read the entire June 23rd newspaper, and the story was not there. I couldn't find it. I found the Arnold story like two or three days later. And in the same newspaper with the Arnold story, I found a reference to the engineer story in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, except it wasn't Cedar Rapids. It was Joliet in Illinois. He didn't say anything about it until a couple of days after Arnold, so there was no documentation prior to it. And it was a single witness case. But looking at what I thought of as fairly good references, Dick Hall's UFO evidence, he hadn't chased it back to the ultimate source, which was the Cedar Rapids Gazette. I found the story. So that was one where the research took me, and I could do it because I lived in Cedar Rapids, and I could see that the story appeared in the newspaper, but it did not appear on June 23rd, which would have been a wonderful bit of evidence had we been able to corroborate it. So there were things like that that went wrong. Doesn't mean the story wasn't true. It just means I couldn't hold it up here's a story published in the newspaper prior to Arnold talking about a disc-shaped object. It was after Arnold talking about it. I believe it happened on the same day, and I think I know what happened. Is Frank Edwards thought that the day it happened was a day earlier. I mean, it was like on Wednesday, I think it was June 24th in 1947. And I think Edwards thought it happened on Tuesday, the day before, based on what the newspaper article said. And so he thought it was June 23rd and didn't realize that the paper had actually been published three or four days after Arnold. So that was one thing, and it's not a major discovery, but what it does is suggest we need to verify our information from the original sources as opposed to looking at other sources, other UFO books, where they don't document what the source came from. And early UFO books, as you know, they didn't bother with footnotes or any of that sort of thing. And I think Frank Edwards basically wrote from memory, and he didn't check his facts, so he got things slightly askew. But it doesn't mean the stories aren't true. It just means we need to follow them to the ultimate source, the original source, if we can do so.
Now, that's one thing I've noticed your last recent books, and that is that you take a story and you look at the source, and sometimes the story is sourced somewhere else. Somebody is quoting somebody who's quoting somebody. And sometimes the facts are fairly similar. Sometimes it's a completely different story. But I want to ask you that question then. In and around the time of the Arnold sighting, before or after, were there cases of UFOs seen in formation that were similar to what Arnold reported either before or after?
One of the things that I was looking for, there was a number of sightings that came out of Richmond, Virginia in March of 1947. That case is not in Project Blue Book. There are a number of cases in Blue Book prior to Arnold. They were reported after Arnold, obviously, but the information was gathered after Arnold. Here's a case that was supposedly reported to the guy's superiors at the Weather Service prior to Arnold, and it's mentioned in various books. But the interesting thing is there's no case file in the Project Blue Book files, but if you go through the final report on Project Grudge, and you have to remember that the first original official investigation was Sign, which evolved into Grudge, which evolved into Blue Book. And at the end of Grudge, they produced a 400-500-page document about UFO sightings. And this sighting from the Weather Service in Richmond, Virginia, is mentioned in the Grudge report. No case file, so you wonder where the case file went, what disappeared. But here would be a case where you've got stuff prior to Arnold talking about disc-shaped objects, but we can't find the case file because it was removed from Project Blue Book, which leads to another point, which is there's a guy named Howard McCoy, who was an intelligence officer at Wright Field in 1947. During World War II, he was an intelligence officer in Europe, and he's investigating the Foo Fighters. When you get to the ghost rockets from Sweden in 1946, you find this guy from the United States investigating the ghost rockets, and it's Howard McCoy. And he's gathering all this information about the ghost rockets. In December of 1946, McCoy is told to set up an unofficial investigation of these things, these strange aerial phenomenon, and it's based in a single room at Wright Field. The room is locked. He and two, three other guys have access to it, but they're gathering all this information, including the ghost rocket stuff. When Arnold sighting happens and they start the official investigations, all that information that they gathered prior to Arnold now disappears. There's virtually nothing about the ghost rockets in the Project Blue Book files. But there should be because the information was gathered. So where'd all that information go?
Yeah, really. Well, Jimmy Doolittle also went over there and investigated the ghost rockets, if I remember correctly.
Yes, but see, Jimmy Doolittle was involved in the ghost rockets, but not in Project Sign and not in Project Grudge, nor was he involved with the Foo Fighters. The guy who was involved in all of that was Howard McCoy. So you've got a guy in World War II. They're looking at this very seriously because they're worried about it being some kind of an enemy at an aircraft development. You know, they don't know whose it is. They don't know what's going on, but they're looking at it. When the war ends, nobody cares anymore because the war is over, and they find out that the Germans had the same concerns with the Foo Fighters. They were seen in the Pacific Theater, and the Japanese had the same concerns about the Foo Fighters, but the guy involved in all of that was Howard McCoy. So when you start with the ghost rockets, which everybody thought was some kind of a Soviet political attempt to intimidate the Swedes, for example, or the Scandinavians, and we find out now that, of course, that isn't true, but the guy investigating is Howard McCoy. So now the guy is involved in Foo Fighters and ghost rockets, and then the early flying disc stuff before Arnold, they're investigating these things in the United States. All that information has basically disappeared. So McCoy had it, and you wonder what happened to it. But McCoy is involved in that. And then when we get to the estimate of the situation that spawned Twining's letter that said the phenomenon is something real and not illusionary and fictitious, and then, of course, mentioned there was no crash-recovered debris, which everybody thinks rules out Roswell. But the thing is, who wrote the letter? Howard McCoy. He wrote it in response to the specific information that was handed to them. It was like 16 or 18 cases for this small estimate of the situation. And he writes the letter that sets up Project Sign. It's Howard McCoy who does that. He's a string that connects all this stuff together and shows how we were led down the path to where we are today.
So basically, there is no record that you can access of similar sightings ahead of Arnold's.
There is some stuff. It's much earlier. There's some Foo Fighter stuff. You have to remember the Foo Fighters were basically balls of light that they saw, but there are some very good sightings where they were disc-shaped objects. And in fact, Len Stringfield, in 1945, he was on a flight from Iwo Jima to Japan in September of 1945, right after the war ended. I mean, it's been over for like days, and we're sending American soldiers into Japan now to set all of that stuff up. He's on an aircraft from Iwo Jima to Japan.
Let's go more into that in our next segment. We have a hard break coming up, and I certainly don't want to interrupt this any further. We have so much ground to cover. We have Kevin Randall joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First game Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, rockoids.com.
Hi, John Huebner from Midas Resources. Are you tired of watching your hard-earned assets dwindle away? As government spending is out of hand and the Federal Reserve is creating in excess of $20 billion a week, are you tired of stockbrokers gambling away your hard-earned money? Is this market a setup for a crash greater than 1987? Too many of today's policies resemble those that led to the collapse of 1929.
This is John Huebner, and that was me in 2007. And we all know what happened when the subprime credit bubble burst. By March 2009, the dollar lost 50% of its value. The entire U.S. banking system was on the verge of collapsing. Like all financial problems of the past, is history about to repeat itself? Call me, John Huebner, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 129, before it's too late to protect yourself. Will the oncoming catastrophe take all private IRAs, 401ks with it? There is a way to protect your hard-earned assets. Call me, John Huebner, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 129.
For over 5 years, you've been hearing about the Berkey guy, so you may know a few things about him. For example, you are well aware of the superior quality and effectiveness of Berkey water filters and accessories. But did you know the Berkeys have had independent lab tests done to prove just how effective they are? It's true, and he can email you the test results. Just visit GoBerkey.com. You may also know that the Berkey guy has helped tens of thousands of people get better prepared. Now here's something you may not know. GoBerkey.com has amazing specials and deals all the time on a wide variety of survival and preparedness products. Most ready to ship same day. Visit the Berkey guy at GoBerkey.com and be sure to click the red Products on Sale Now button. You can always call toll-free 877-886-3653. Again, that's 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com, home of the Berkey guy.
Springtime is saved big time at Herbal Healer Academy. Long-term customers know spring is the time to stock up at HerbalHealer.com. And for new customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Log on for spring specials, including our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Choose from Herbal Healer's great variety of weight loss products like apple cider vinegar, Hoodia and Metabolic Complex, and Pro Metabolic, all on sale now. Also, the anti-parasite Intestinal Freedom and Warwood Plus Complex, plus Stevia Liquid Sweetener and the Super Enzymes, all on sale for spring at HerbalHealer.com. As always, we offer certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on now to HerbalHealer.com and click on Spring Specials to save big with our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
A question being about UFO sightings, similar to what Kenneth Arnold saw. In the years, days before the case, we're talking to Kevin Randall, author of The Government UFO Files. Let's continue with this discussion about what Leonard Stringfield saw.
he sees the three objects out close to the airplane, and the engine starts to sputter, and the pilot comes over the air and tells him, you know, we may have to ditch here because our engines are beginning to run erratically. And these objects moved off, and the engines began to run perfectly. So now we've got Len Stringfield, very credible man, telling us of an electromagnetic effect of an airplane in September of 1945, and we know how that translates to the UFO field. So there are things like that scattered through it. What I was looking for was something specifically like March, April, May, and June prior to Arnold talking about disc-shaped objects. But I can find stuff earlier than that that talk about disc-shaped objects and formations of objects. But there's something else that relates to Arnold. If you look at the original drawing he made for the Air Force or for the Army Air Forces at the time, which is available in the Project Blue Book files, you see it's kind of a heel-shaped object with a little bit of a scallop at the end, not a whole lot, but that kind of a blunt end type thing like you'd see on the heel of a shoe. Just days, 2 weeks later, a fellow named William Rhodes takes a photograph of an object over Phoenix, Arizona, July 7th, 1947. And what does the object look like? It looks like a heel-shaped object. It looks exactly what Arnold was talking about. Now, Arnold, because he kind of started this whole thing, he was asked by Ray Palmer, who was the editor of a science fiction magazine that got deep into the Shaver mystery.
Oh, yes, yes.
But the point is, you know, it relates to Maury Island, and these two guys from Maury Island, which is Puget Sound area of Washington, had written to Palmer talking about their UFO sighting, which I believe to be a hoax, and that's not really the important point. The point is, Palmer asked Arnold to investigate. So Arnold, this businessman from Boise, Idaho, whose big claim to fame is he saw the UFOs and he's a private pilot, is now asked to investigate a UFO sighting. He doesn't know what he's doing. So he calls a friend of his, E.J. Smith, which, by the way, is the same name of the guy who was the captain of the Titanic. But Smith was the airline pilot on a United Airlines flight on July 4th. He'd seen a bunch of UFOs pacing his aircraft. Arnold knows him and calls him, so they get together in Washington to investigate this case, this Maury Island case, and they're still kind of out of their depth here. They don't know what they're doing. But Arnold had been interviewed by two guys from Hamilton Air Force Base, Brown and Davidson, two intelligence officers. And the intelligence officer, I think it was Brown, had told Arnold, you know, if you have any questions, give me a call. So Arnold called Brown to tell him about this sighting, and Brown and Davidson took a B-25 from Hamilton. They were both qualified pilots, and they flew up to the area to talk to Arnold about this. The real point of the whole story is Arnold asked if there'd been any other sightings like his, and Brown told him about the Rhodes photos and sketched it for him and told him what was going on there. But then Brown and Davidson, as they're going back, the airplane fire developed in the engine, and they were killed in the accident that transpired afterwards. No evidence that a UFO shot it down, no evidence that they were carrying secret materials back from Maury Island, any of that stuff. It was just a horrible aircraft accident. The two people had bailed out and survived, so you know we have a good idea of what was going on there. But the real point is Brown told Arnold about the Rhodes photos as the best evidence they had at the time, and then the Air Force, or the Army Air Forces, goes to great lengths to discredit Rhodes by making fun of his laboratory in the backyard and the fact he called himself a doctor, even though they could find no evidence of the doctorate. But it turns out Rhodes had held like 40 patents and was a very bright guy who'd worked for the U.S. government during the Second World War and was given the Navy. The Navy wanted to get more prestige, so they gave a series of tests to the engineers working for them, and if you scored so high on it, you were given the equivalency of a master's degree, and if you scored higher, you were given the equivalency of a PhD. So Rhodes had one of these equivalent PhD things. So it wasn't like he was completely making it up. There was some documentation to support that, even though it's kind of a shaky PhD type thing. But Rhodes is a very credible guy, and the government worked very hard to discredit him. And the other interesting thing is when he was first interviewed by government officials, he was an FBI agent and a CIC agent, an Army intelligence guy. And the Army intelligence guy, of course, is dressed in civilian clothes as is the FBI guy. And he says to the FBI guy, don't tell him I'm Army intelligence. This is all documented in the government file. So we show sort of the duplicity there, that the Army didn't want the people to know that they were investigating the UFO sightings as they were with Rhodes, and they had the perfect foil. I mean, the FBI guy shows his credentials and says, I'm Agent so-and-so, and this is my partner, guy working with me, and they just went on from that. You know, Special Agent so-and-so, who was happened to be not a special agent of the FBI, but a special agent of the counterintelligence.
Huh. There you go.
Is that convoluted enough for you?
Very. I still haven't found the cases that are similar to Arnold's before Arnold, though, after all that.
And that's the exact same problem I have. I can find some much earlier, especially with the Foo Fighter stuff out of World War II. And you go back even further than that, you can find disc-shaped objects. But the document cases where they reported the thing in some arena prior to Arnold, I have not been able to find. In a number of stories, and there was one from a newspaper editor in Idaho, I think, after Arnold's sighting broke, he wrote his own story. And he said, this is something I saw the month prior. So it was before Arnold, but it's not documented till after Arnold.
Right, and I think there was a case in Oregon and maybe Northern California that was right around that same week time period. I'm not sure if it was several days.
There's a whole bunch of those, and the Blue Book files have some of them. That estimate of the situation that went to Wright Field in July of 1947 that spawned the Twining letter, there were 18 cases. Arnold is chronologically is the fifth case they look at. So there's like four cases prior to that where they're talking about similar things, and it's pilots who've seen them, and those are in the Project Blue Book files, or maybe not. I think they're mentioned, but sometimes the case is missing. But, I mean, we know what the cases were, so there are some cases. The problem is we can't document them specifically prior to Arnold. You know, they're saying, well, I saw this before Arnold, but I didn't report it because I didn't think anybody would believe me. So we've got a number of those sorts of things. Once we get beyond Arnold, in just days after Arnold, we get a lot of disc-shaped craft. But we got a lot of other stuff, too.
Well, the question, of course, one would raise here, the skeptic, is if those sightings occurred after Arnold's, then somehow Arnold's sighting, the description, influenced them regardless of the reality.
Yes, and the other side of that coin is anything that was seen in the sky, any aerial phenomena, regardless of the shape, was called a flying saucer. So there's a number of cases, if you look at them, they're talking about cigar-shaped craft, or they're talking about glowing balls or ball-shaped objects, things like that. In Portland, Oregon, I think over the July 4th weekend, there was a series of sightings by both civilians and police officers at several different locations over a matter of hours, and they described the object as looking like a dime, so it's a flat object, circular, but it's not really saucer-shaped as we think of the classic saucer. But everything, whether it was cigar-shaped or whatever it looked like, was labeled as a flying saucer after Arnold made that statement, or after the press picked up on flying saucer.
So how do you separate the reality from the possible fantasy? That's a question. We have a lot more to cover, and we have some questions from our listeners of our guest, Kevin Randall. This is one of the many thousands of books he's written. I understand he is fighting it out with Brad Steiger to be the most prolific author of paranormal books on the planet. Since Steiger is probably older, well, we don't want to get into that. The book is called The Government UFO Files, The Conspiracy of Cover-Up. I'm going to look more into what may or may not be covered up. Kevin Randall, again, is the guest with Gene and Chris. You're in
The Paracast.
Independently leading the way for the nation. Compelling talk for every political persuasion. We are GCN.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats, I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
We live in a complicated society. Stressful issues are always popping up. Have you ever been treated unfairly by someone? Have you ever been overcharged for a repair? Have you ever signed a contract or a document? Worried about identity theft? How many times have you been in those unique situations where you just wanted to call an attorney to find out if you're right or wrong, or what your legal rights are? But every time you think about calling an attorney, what do you think about first? That's right. Who do you call, and how much will it cost? Our friends at Legal Shield have found a solution. With a nationwide network of 6,900 attorneys who average over 19 years of experience, Legal Shield's law firms take over 40,000 calls per week helping their members. For less than $20 per month, you can have access to Legal Shield on everything from the trivial to the traumatic. Let Legal Shield stand up for your rights at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com. Or call 855-340-SAVE. 855-340-7283.
Results will vary from case to case. What good is a Big Berkey water filter?
We get that question a lot here at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And in a word, the answer is protection. Protection from water main breaks, E. coli contamination, environmental chemical spills, pesticide runoff, chlorine taste and smell, and all forms of fluoride. Plus, Big Berkey water filters are the original gravity water filter system and most trusted on the market for a reason. Tested by multiple independent NSF EPA certified labs, they are the gold standard in water purification. At only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. That means big savings. Big Berkey, the one that's powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get a Big Berkey today at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit our website or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.
Question. Could too many GMO foods and toxins be overloading your digestive and immune systems? Answer, yes. If you are searching for a powerful detox that's gentle enough to use every day, use Pro-EM-1 from Terriganics. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic that uses good bacteria to suppress pathogens and gently eliminate toxins from your body. A healthy digestive system will cleanse and remove toxins, support weight loss, improve absorption of food nutrients, and aid in controlling yeast and other infections. Pro-EM-1 is made with only non-GMO and certified organic ingredients, has no preservatives, and is dairy, soy, wheat, and gluten-free. Pro-EM-1 is the key to your digestive health. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terriganics.com, spelled Terraganix.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Also available through Amazon Prime. Pro-EM-1 from Terriganics. Life's getting better.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
All right. So let's look here more about the possible cover-up. So a lot of information is out there. Do you think, Kevin Randall, that the government has guilty knowledge of the actual solution to the so-called UFO enigma?
Absolutely. I think they picked up the answer in early July 1947 when the thing crashed at Roswell. I think if you take a look at the history, which we now have connected to the Foo Fighters, it's not a separate entity. It's all part of the same ongoing thing. But if we look at that, we see on July 8th, the Army announces they have a flying saucer. 3 hours later, they say, nah, it's a weather balloon. The guys in Roswell just overreacted. It's a weather balloon. And so nobody's talking about that. But the very next day, July 9th, 1947, you get newspaper articles that say the Army and Navy moved today to suppress stories of flying saucers whizzing through the atmosphere. Why suddenly on July 9th did they care about us studying stories of flying saucers whizzing through the atmosphere when in the 2 weeks after Arnold, they didn't care? There's all kinds of stories where they're interviewing military people and they're saying, well, we don't know what it is. It's not one of ours. It's not one of our research projects. It might be this. It might be that. There's all kinds of stories from scientists making claims about what flying saucers might be. All of that's going on. And suddenly on July 9th, the Army and the Navy moved to start suppressing the stories, to cut it down, which, by the way, is the same thing the Swedish government, the Finnish government did in 1946 with the ghost rockets. Eventually, the number of reports in the newspaper reached a critical mass, and the government tried to suppress the stories and stop and ask the newspapers to stop reporting them. So after July 9th, 1947, you have a great drop-off on the number of stories printed about UFOs in the newspaper. I think indirectly that shows us that they have, as you put it, guilty knowledge of what the flying saucers are.
Well, in the sense of knowing what they are, do they know where they come from, or is it just something unknown that we cannot put our hands on?
I believe that they know they're extraterrestrial. We now know, that they're not interplanetary. I think in 1947, the discussion was interplanetary, and the two culprits in that were Mars and Venus. And, of course, we know Venus is really, really hot, and the lead would melt on the surface, which explains why nobody's really put a spacecraft on the surface of Venus to transmit it for very long, because it melted. But in looking at Mars, we know pretty well that there's nothing on Mars either. So you're looking at interstellar distances.
I remember, Kevin, reading the early books from Donald Kehoe, where he was talking so much about the possibility of Mars.
Yes, and everybody's looking at the interplanetary solution to it. That was because our knowledge of Mars and Venus was much more limited than it is today. So we're now talking interstellar. It's clearly that if these are structured craft built somewhere, they're built outside the solar system. They've come into the solar system from one of these other star systems. But we have no real clues. The only thing that's ever come up was the Barney and Betty Hill star map. But our knowledge of astronomy, as it's grown, shows that some of the assumptions made by Marjorie Fish, as the woman who identified the Zeta 1, Zeta 2 reticuli system as where the aliens that abducted Betty Hill came from. I think a lot of the information she used is now horribly out of date, and we need to revisit that to see if we can narrow it down. But the answer to the question is, all I can say with any certainty is that they're from outside the solar system. I don't know where. And that's the other thing. I don't know if it's, is it easier to travel great distances once you've mastered the speed of light barrier? Or is it, do the distances make a great difference? So you'd assume that the UFOs come from our galactic neighborhood as opposed to clear across the galaxy or something like that. And I don't have an answer. All I know is, in our society, for me to go to California from where I live, I have to fly 90 minutes in the wrong direction to reach a hub, and then fly 90 minutes back to the point where I started to get to Los Angeles, where if I'm going from New York to Los Angeles, I can do it much quicker. The analogy, of course, I don't know if the analogy works really well, but it just kind of thing. It's easier to go coast to coast than it is from the Midwest to one of the coasts.
Let's go back to the government secrecy for a moment. Okay.
Okay.
So they know in 1947, having captured spacecraft at Roswell, what's going on? Even if they're not at all certain where they come from precisely, they know this is something that is not of this world. How do you keep the secret for over 60 years?
The answer is Aztec, but I'll get to that in a minute.
Aztec,
New Mexico. But I'll get to that in a moment.
Yeah, because I'm very curious about what you're going to add about that, yes.
The thing is, in 1947, once they've picked up the craft, they have no clue as to what's going on. They now know they know that it's alien. They know it's from outside the Earth's atmosphere. But they don't know if it's the beginning of an invasion force. They don't know if it's a threat to national security. They don't know if it's benign. They don't know anything. All they know is they've got one, and it's clearly not from Earth. So they are lucky that the thing fell in the desolate wastes of New Mexico, 70 miles from Roswell, for example. They're able to suppress the media because it is not nearly as argumentative then as it is today, or adversarial, I guess would be a better word, as it is today. And when they ask people to keep things quiet, they pretty much did. The other thing is they controlled the witnesses. Mac Brazel found the thing. Well, he's in Roswell being held by the military. Jesse Marcel, who went out and picked up the stuff, he's in Fort Worth at 8th Air Force Headquarters, so the press can't find him. The sheriff tells anybody who calls, I'm working with the boys out at the base. You need to talk to them. So they're able to suppress the information in 1947. Today's environment, they'd never get away with it unless the press for some reason liked the administration, in which case they don't get quite as in their face as they would for some others. But that's another problem. So in 1947, they don't know what's going on. They're able to control the flow of information because of the situation that happened. In 1952, a book's published called Behind the Flying Saucers. And it's alleged that there was a crash near Aztec, New Mexico. At the same time, I guess the book came out in 1950. In 1952, in True Magazine, there was an expose of that story done by a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, where he kind of took the story of the Aztec crash apart and set it at the feet of two con men who eventually were arrested in Colorado for some sort of confidence scheme. In fact, Silas Newton. Thank you. Silas Newton had a long history of arrests for con games going back into the 1930s.
Let me just interrupt for a second.
Okay.
Our listeners want to hear more about this. There was a debate on the Paracast with Kevin Randall and with, of course, Scott Ramsey, who's co-author of a book that argues in favor of Aztec. Please go on.
But the validity of Aztec really isn't important here. What is important is the expose written by J.P. Kane in the San Francisco Chronicle pretty well took apart the Aztec case, at least in the belief of all the people in UFOs. So nobody in the UFO community wanted to talk about UFO crashes. So if you had the story of a UFO crash, it was pretty well shelved. Nobody wanted to talk to it. NICAP, one of the big civilian organizations, they didn't even want to hear about occupants for the most part. APRIL, the other one, at least got into the occupants and the abductions, but they didn't want to have anything to do with UFO crashes. So nobody's talking about UFO crashes at all. So nobody's looking into those stories with any kind of depth except at Aztec, and that would appear periodically, and somebody would look at it, and then somebody else would say, no, it's all a hoax.
So is Aztec a smokescreen for Roswell?
It turned out that way. I don't think it originally was intended that way, but it became a smokescreen. I remember when the Roswell incident came out in the 1980 and seeing the book and thinking to myself, oh, this is just Aztec repackaged. And so I didn't even look at it until QFOS asked me to participate in their investigation of the Roswell case because they wanted someone with a military background, because a lot of the witnesses were ex-military, and they thought I might bring some insight into the military mind and maybe would relate to these guys better than a civilian would.
We're going to have more insights from Kevin Randall on the other side. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Network for the independent minded. The Genesis Communications Network. GCN.
First game Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is the Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and the Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Talk to a sales rep at iWeb.com. Use the promo code TechNightOwl for a special discount.
Sudden change in the wind. The day grows dark as ominous clouds move in and lightning begins to carve arcs in the sky. And you realize you are not prepared.
I am telling you to take cover.
The number of intense storms is increasing exponentially in the U.S. Tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, and droughts are happening with greater magnitude and frequency. If you are choosing to rely on the government to save you,
and no one's coming to help them,
you could be dead wrong. The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to MyPatriotSupply.com. There you'll find the absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48. Visit us online or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-855-905-MY-TV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. Say goodbye to the cable guy. And get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-855-905-MY-TV. Sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99, and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional installation. You control what you watch when you watch it. Record your favorite shows. Pause and rewind live TV. Even skip the commercials. Watch local channels, too. At just $19.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-855-905-MY-TV. 1-855-905-MY-TV. Say goodbye to the cable guy. Cut costs and get more. 1-855-905-MY-TV. 1-855-905-MY-TV.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that most of the soils that we grow our crops on here in the United States and across the industrialized world are almost completely depleted of almost all of the key minerals and trace elements that our bodies need to rebuild themselves, fight off cancer, and be healthy. I then searched out the best vitamin and mineral company out there and discovered Youngevity. The Youngevity products are designed to give you the real nutrition you need, and once you've got that, you don't have to eat as much to be satisfied. I've lost 37 pounds in 2 months simply getting the vitamins and minerals I need. Check it out for yourself. It's incredible. Go to InfoWarsTeam.com today and order your first canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Complete Multivitamin Mineral Complex Dietary Supplement. That's InfoWarsTeam.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Interviewing Kevin Randall is so easy. I just say, how about? And he answers the question. Okay, so we're exploring what evidence the government might have about UFO reality. We're into Roswell and Aztec, and let's have you go on, Kevin Randall.
Well, the point simply was that because of the expose done by J.P. Kane of the Aztec crash back in 1952, UFO researchers and UFO organizations didn't want to hear about UFO crashes. Once the Roswell incident was published, there wasn't a great flood to that. I think the real key to begin the investigations of UFO crashes was Len Stringfield's, I think it was 1978, UFO on paper, where he actually mentioned Jesse Marcel, the air intelligence officer from Roswell, talking about the crash there. And then, of course, the book came out. And then QFOS learned that there was still a lot of witnesses who had not been interviewed or not been contacted or a possibility of additional witnesses. And Don Schmidt and I began the investigation into the case in 1989. But up to that point, nobody's really talking about this except in a very limited fashion. So that one of the ways they kept the secret was kept is we sort of kept it ourselves, simply not believing that there would be a UFO crash or any evidence. And it was Roswell that kind of turned all of that around because you had so many witnesses. Colonel Blanchard, the commander of the 509th Bomb Group, every member of his staff, his primary staff, in Roswell in 1947, with a single exception, talked about this thing being alien. Jesse Marcel said it was something that came to Earth, but it was not from Earth. The provost marshal, Edwin Easley, told me that it was extraterrestrial. I said to him in a phone interview or a phone conversation, are we following the right path? And Easley says, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, we think it was extraterrestrial. And Easley says, well, let me put it this way. That's not the wrong path. In essence, telling me, yeah, we're on the right path. Patrick Saunders, who was the base adjutant, on the flyleaf of one of the books that I had written, the flyleaf talks about how they covered the whole thing up. Saunders wrote, this is the truth, and I never told anybody about it, and signed his name to it and sent it off to a friend who sent me a Xerox copy of that. So every member of Blanchard's staff who we were able to interview said the thing was alien. But nobody was talking about that from 1947 because Ramey the commander of 8th Air Force, who said it was a weather balloon. Everybody accepted that answer and continued to march. Aztec came along, and it was thoroughly debunked in 1952 to everybody's satisfaction at that time. And so nobody wants to talk about UFO crashes. And that's the way this thing stayed buried for so long. Interestingly, in the Project Blue Book files, you'll find any number of crash reports from 1947. They're all hoaxes. I mean, one guy found a little 6-inch disc, for example. They're all pretty much hoaxes. There's no reference to Roswell in that, but that was a UFO sighting. It was front page paper. You'd think there'd be a file on Roswell in the Project Blue Book files, but there's not. The only reference I've ever found in the Project Blue Book files to Roswell was in the middle paragraph in a 3-paragraph story in part of another file that said that a blistering rebuke had been issued to Walter Hawk for his press release the day before. So we know it's a reference to Roswell in this newspaper clipping, but there's no case file for Roswell, yet there are for some of these other UFO crash hoaxes.
Let's move beyond that a little bit, because we've covered Roswell over and over again. This is 2014, okay?
Yes, it is.
All right. So now that we're sitting here in 2014, and the secret was found out in 1947, where is the Roswell spaceship? Is it secreted away in a dustbin in Warehouse 13? Are they still looking over it? Are they trying to reverse engineer the technology? What about the pilots? Where are they today, and who's keeping the secret today?
I think the secret is kept by a very small number of bureaucrats. I think as our technology develops, we apply it to the craft or the pieces of the craft or whatever we have. We apply our technology to the alien bodies to see what we can learn about their biology, and we do it as our technology develops. We know, based on the evidence from 1947, that everything went to Wright Field, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. General Exxon, who was at Wright-Patterson at the time, said that one of the bodies had gone to Lowry in Denver, because Lowry at the time was the Army's mortuary service, and they were looking for a way to preserve the bodies, because you assume that you have unique biological samples and you're not going to get any more. So you want to preserve them as best they can, and they figured they sent it, according to Exxon, to Lowry for that sort of experimentation. Where the stuff is today, I couldn't tell you. I've heard a rumor that the Navy has an island base out in the Pacific where all this stuff is stored. And when you think about it, it makes perfect sense, because that would be the easiest way to keep it secure, because nobody's going to be sneaking up on an island to take a look at it. The people there are going to be, you would assume, well-trained, and they would have limited knowledge of what was going on, except for a small number of people. But I don't know. Once it got to Wright Field, we really don't have a good idea of where the stuff went. But you have to assume that we continue to apply our technology to it as it goes forward.
So how do we unearth the secret? And the second question would be, does the White House know? Or is the president out of the loop? He's just a temporary resident.
I think the president is out of the loop, but the only reason is there are much more pressing issues on his plate. And if something happened, he would be told. And I know of an example of something like this. There was something called Operation Solo. This was a guy who'd been a communist in the 1930s, an American who'd been a communist in the 1930s and realized, as he learned more about the Soviet Union, that the communism ideal was not being translated well in Soviet Union. And he flipped to the other side and became an FBI informant. But he was so respected by the Soviets that he's on the inside in the Soviet Union. He's now being run by the FBI. He goes to the Soviet Union repeatedly. He's told all kinds of interesting things that he brings back and gives to the FBI, because that's his job. The operation was run out of the New York office, and most of the agents in the New York office didn't know about this operation. The president didn't know about it. And the only time they told a president about it was Gerald Ford, and he had just become president after Nixon had resigned. He was about to meet with the Soviet premier, and he was worried about how well he would do. So the FBI briefed him on Operation Solo, which was this wonderful operation giving us all kinds of inside information about the operations in the Kremlin and what is going on in the Soviet Union. But the president wasn't told routinely, because it wasn't necessary for the president to know that to do his job. And I think that's where the UFO stuff falls. It's something that's, you know, really, really interesting. And if the president wanted to find out, he could, because he's the president. But I don't think he's routinely briefed on it, because it is not necessary for him to know this stuff to do his job properly.
So what do we do? What do we peasants do here who have been ranting about UFOs or whatever they're called for all these years? How do we persuade the powers that be to reveal their guilty knowledge?
We're never going to persuade them. There is no motivation for them to tell us. And it doesn't matter how close we get, they're not going to tell us. The only way it's going to happen is if the UFOs, the alien creatures, land and say, here we are, and there's no way to deny it. But what we can do, and this is the thing I found interesting by going through the files and the documents, is we can uncover some of this stuff. For example, we learned about Project Moondust because the State Department, in a FOIA request, released some UFO-related documents that referenced Moondust, which they shouldn't have done, but they did. But here's the thing that just cracks me up. As I was working on the book, I was looking for a sighting in the 1960 range, and as I was scanning by it, I thought I saw the words Moondust in the Project Blue Book files. So I went back. I found four cases in the 1960s labeled Moondust. I found a document that tells me that Moondust began in 1957. It was dated December of 1957. It says this project recently created, obviously because of Sputnik, you know, now exists for the recovery of information, Project Moondust. So there was a reference to Moondust and Moondust cases in the Project Blue Book files. And as far as I know, nobody ever made that connection before. I found it accidentally by looking for something else. So the point is we need to look at all the documentation that is available, and it's available in a lot of different places, and see what we can uncover by that. We learned the name of Moondust. We learned that Moondust had a UFO component. We learned that Moondust transcended Project Blue Book. So when Blue Book ended, Moondust kept going, and part of the Moondust mission was a UFO investigation. When the code name was compromised in the mid-1980s, they changed the code name and kept going. And we know this because Robert Todd filed a FOIA request, and they told him the new name is properly classified. So there was no need to tell him. So we know that all that changed was the code name. So we need to keep looking at that stuff and seeing all these little nuggets that we can find inside the files with the documentation and say, you know, here we go. Here's documentation that shows this. And you can look at this document. You can get it yourself through FOIA, which, by the way, you can't do with MJ-12. But if you FOIA the State Department for Moondust, they will send you documents with Moondust on it. I found in the Project Blue Book files.
Let's go into our break. Oh, boy. It's getting interesting. More by the second with Kevin Randall and Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast. Not just an alternative to the mainstream media. We're the premier independent talk radio network. We are GCN.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
The people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Today is an important day. It's your day to be ready, take care of your family, and buy your emergency food supply from the Freeze Dry Guy. Because today, the Freeze Dry Guy introduces our Mountain House and Packaway 1 month food supply. Today, get the Freeze Dry Guy's 30-day premium unit, normally $364, sale priced at $263, save $101. Buy two cases, normally $727, sale priced at $506, save $222. Or choose three 30-day premium units, normally $1,091, now only $748, save $343. From the Freeze Dry Guy. These premium units are packed with the highest quality Mountain House entrees, meats, vegetables, and Packaway brand freeze dried pineapple and dehydrates, such as milk, ABC stew, and rolled oats, 289 half cup servings. Go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. Free shipping to the lower 48. Hurry, our Mountain House and Packaway 1 month supply sale ends soon. So call now, 866-404-3663.